Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and this morning's conversation is with Carrie Dominguez. Carrie's the chair of the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. Well, Carrie, can you tell us about some of the partnerships the commission has with the state and local organizations?
Yes, we have. We've had a long-standing relationship with what we call FEPAs, Fair Employment Practices Agencies. Essentially, they're state human rights commissions, and we have working arrangements with them so that when an individual files a charge at the state level, they can serve as our agents. Sometimes they file both at the federal level with the EEOC as well as at the local level. They're a very, very important component of our work practices because they serve as agents. They keep us informed of what's going on at the various states. And now we are actually piloting an effort to involve some of those FEPAs in mediation on behalf of the commission. Similarly with the TEROs, the Tribal Employment Rights Offices that work, they serve as representatives of the commission within the various tribes to make sure that if they're individuals, Native Americans who believe they're being discriminated against, that they represent the commission and take those charges and process them on our behalf.
What role will the commission play in Homeland Security?
We will continue to play a very important role. We went out quite aggressively talking to national leaders, Muslims and Arab Americans and Sikhs. In fact, the first commission meeting that I held was relating to backlash discrimination after 9/11. We want to make sure that innocent victims do not suffer and that anger is not misdirected at them because they happen to be Muslims or Sikhs. So from our perspective, our challenge is to make sure that this valuable group of workers in America are not singled out, are not profiled in the workplace any differently than any other individual would be. So making sure that everyone gets treated fairly and equally under the law. And so we'll be coordinating very closely with the Homeland Security Department to make sure that that message gets out.
What are the next challenges on the horizon for the EEOC?
We have a number of challenges. Legislatively, there are three laws that are working their way through Congress, one of which has to do with genetics discrimination. It's sort of the new frontier with the Human Genome Project and the decoding of the DNA. We now have very sophisticated medical tests that can identify genetic markers that can tell an individual whether they're predisposed to developing certain illnesses like multiple sclerosis, diabetes, carpal tunnel, et cetera. And there's some concern that if this information gets in the hand of an employer, that it may be used for employment selection, employment issues that have nothing to do because you're genetically predisposed, does not mean that the illness is going to be developed. But that's one of the new frontiers that Congress is looking at and considering passing a law prohibiting discrimination on the basis of your genetics. Similarly, there are a couple of other laws working their way through Congress, one of which is the Employment Non-Discrimination Act on the basis of sexual orientation, which is not covered at, is covered in a number of states but not at the federal level, as well as a strengthened law relating to workplace religious discrimination. And again, a lot of it had to do with the backlash from 9/11 and making sure that we received over 700 charges, by the way, after September the 11th from Muslims and Sikhs and Arab Americans because of the beard that they, the Sikhs have the long beard or the turbans or the dresses. A lot of them were being singled out. At least the allegations were that they were being singled out. So this Workplace Discrimination Act heightens awareness to some of these things along with many others. So I think legislatively we'll have the new frontier of employment discrimination issues to address. Structurally, we're going to continue to refine our processes. And as I said earlier, at our infrastructure, we commissioned the National Academy for Public Administration to come in, and they're the only congressionally chartered group and does a lot of work with federal agencies. We invited them to come in and interview many of our employees, hundreds of our employees, and stakeholders to talk about what's working, what's not working, how can we refine our processes and make our organization flatter and return many more of our resources to the trenches, if you will, down to the investigative resources where we have such an important need.
What's your vision for the EEOC over the next 5-10 years?
My vision is to continue to build on the excellence that we've gained so far. EEOC is the premier civil rights employment law enforcement agency in the nation. We've been charged by statute by the president to serve as the lead coordinator of all of these. We work closely with Justice and Department of Labor and the Office of Personnel Management. We want to build on that, and I wanted to take it to a higher level. I think we need to be the global premier enforcement agency, and we want to do it by modeling the best, the excellence that we can model in terms of outreach, in terms of professionalism, in terms of our enforcement activities. We've been working very closely with Canada and European countries, and we want to, especially when you have so many multinational companies, like IBM, for example, is all over the globe, we want to make sure that we facilitate developing consistent standards across countries. And the way to do that is by sharing our expertise with other countries. So I have personally committed to working very closely with my counterparts in other nations, participating in global summits and sharing information, because it's a lofty vision, but the world is getting smaller, and we need to make sure that we speak with one voice.
Could you ever envision the day when the commission goes out of business because there are no more complaints?
I think is a dream for all of us who work in these types of programs. You know, wouldn't it be an ideal world when we no longer have to endure discrimination or bias or prejudice? So yes, I hope it will happen in my lifetime. But the issues keep evolving. It used to be hiring. Now it's more on the termination side. So it means that a lot of people are getting hired, so that's the good news. It used to be that the doors were locked for many. So, yes, I think the issues are evolving, becoming more sophisticated, and I hope that in my lifetime we can see a reduced amount of focus on this and a much more aggressive effort at the harmony in the workplace.
Throughout our conversation this morning, you've talked about the EEOC working with different organizations at the state level, at the government level, the private sector. What are the management challenges, and how do you make that collaboration work?
A lot of it, again, it gets back to the people. Even in our own agency, if people is the coordination and how people make it work. And that's what I have found to be the success. By reaching out to my counterparts at the state level, every state that I visit, I make it a point of visiting with my director of the State Human Rights Commission, my counterpart. And that's what's going to make the difference. I said earlier, I believe in the power of one. I do believe that a person can make a lasting difference, and we certainly have plenty of experiences along those lines. So the coordination at that outreach requires leadership. Requires extensive communications, requires modeling the behaviors that we want others to emulate. And if we do that and we do it consistently and credibly, it'll happen. It'll happen throughout.
What advice would you give to perhaps a young person interested in a career in public service?
My advice would be to go for it. It's a novel calling. I have been enriched tremendously personally by my experiences in government. It may not be the most financially rewarding, but it's certainly the most intrinsically rewarding because you do make a very positive difference and you see the results day in and day out. It's just a wonderful career, and I think with all the exciting changes about to hit in the federal government, that we'll see the kinds of opportunities we're used to seeing in the private sector take hold in the public sector. So I would encourage everyone who's listening to give it a serious thought, not to be intimidated by those long forms to fill the applications, but to really go for it and see beyond that, because they can make a big positive difference.
I'm afraid we're out of time this morning, Carrie. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Paul. It's a pleasure to be here. And remember, www.eeoc.gov is where you can get more information about what we're doing.
Great. Thank you. This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Carrie Dominguez. Carrie's the chair of the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. Be sure and visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can also get a transcript of today's very interesting conversation. Again, that's businessofgovernment.org. This is Paul Lawrence. Thank you for listening.
How can we strengthen the relationship between performance and public service? A recent endowment report makes the case for performance management by confronting conventional attitudes. The report, Performance Management, A Start Where You Are, Use What You Have Guide, by author Chris Y., provides a convenient way for practitioners to find practical, low-cost help when they need it in their specific situations on the ground. For a copy of the report, visit our website at www.businessofgovernment.org or call us at 703-741-1077.